Welcome again to the Townsville Feminist Stories podcast. My name is Chantal Oxenham, and I am a member of the Townsville Feminist Collective. In this podcast, I am talking with well-known local woman, Gracelyn Smallwood, about her personal perspectives as a long-time Indigenous activist and feminist in Townsville. Professor Elder Gracelyn Smallwood is a Birriguba, Kalkadoon and South Sea Islander woman who has been a strong advocate for the rights of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples for many years at the local, national and international level. She has worked in many different arenas with particular emphasis on health and human rights. At the same time, she has been a committed and vocal feminist in the community. She is the recipient of a number of prestigious awards, including the member of the Order of Australia.
Wadamoli, and I'd like to pay my respects to the local traditional owners and traditional owners all around this country.
Thank you. So, Gracelyn, what do you see as some of the key factors that have shaped your life?
Yes, when growing up, we didn't have the modern electricity or all of those things, and storytelling was quite prevalent, and I was absolutely privileged to listen to the stories of elders. My dad was removed and sent to the mission of Palm Island with many others under the Aboriginal Protection Act. So those stories have actually shaped me. And some people ask me if I started when I was 17. No, I was a teenager. And those stories were priceless because most of those stories were from women that had been under this terrible legislation, and some of them told me of the horrific treatment of rapes, beatings and terrible cruelty. And even though it was 60 years ago I was listening to these stories, I can repeat just about every person that I spoke to have all passed away. So that shaped me as to what I wanted to be. Most people say I want to be a psychologist or a doctor. I just told people I wanted to be a human rights activist because of these horrific stories.
And so why is feminism important to you?
Yes, look, having travelled the world, here I am 75 soon, every country in the world I went to, I always spoke to strong women of all different backgrounds. And the stories were similar about the dominance of males, misogynistic behaviour, and always rape and violence was a part of my questioning to these women. And many hardly spoke until I drew it out when I started questioning them, because I travel the world as a human rights activist as well as a strong feminist. So that's why it shaped me, and to this very day, 50, 60 years later, I'm still doing the advocacy against human rights violations, supported totally by feminism.
Thank you. Yeah. And what are some of the key issues you see facing both Indigenous and non-Indigenous women today?
Domestic violence, death from domestic violence, total dominance, and it's just so unfortunate that our black males have learnt well from the white colonisers in terms of controlling women, and our men, who are up sometimes 90% of prisons, are black males, but they've learnt well in terms of violence and abuse. And so that's a key issue, because the unresolved grief, loss and trauma from the colonial genocide is still there and still. And when you carry all of that trauma without releasing it, it interferes with your spirit, and you continue to deliver total dominance and violence. And so I'm finding that not just in lower socioeconomic people, I'm finding it in the privileged. And the privileged sometimes hide it a lot because of embarrassment. But I find right across the world that feminism has to be out in the forefront, because women of all races are extremely oppressed by the dominance of males.
Yes. I think this is a common occurring, as you say, and from a feminist activist perspective, you can see that. So it is interesting that throughout all your travels, this is what you've seen across the world and in various countries and all that. So
yes, absolutely.
And what are the achievements that you have been most proud of?
I guess being proud of, you know, being brought up with no electricity and at the age of 17 going nursing, which was never heard of, even though we had beautiful Indigenous nurses. My mum said, go nursing. And the matron, who I maintain was a wonderful non-Indigenous woman, I look back at my life and said the other day, she, if it wasn't for Matron Wanchap, I don't believe I would have got into nursing. I don't believe I would have finished. And she asked me, could she come up to the condemned house and meet my mother, because I was extremely outspoken and there was a few complaints put in about my behaviour, in terms of every black person was my relative. So I think that was a great achievement, of graduating as a registered nurse. And then the matron said, we have one vacancy left for a midwife, and as you're one of 19 children, I think I'll keep this spot for you. So I went straight into midwifery, which I loved so much. Then I did a diploma in Indigenous mental health in the Aboriginal Health Clinic, and travelled the world, went out bush and worked with no technology, and then came back and I nursed one of the first HIV cases in the Western world, came back and did a Master of Science degree at James Cook, and then did a PhD on human rights. So I guess those achievements, I'm very grateful but very humble, because many people, Indigenous and non-Indigenous, helped me through, just with saying, keep going, a bit like Kathy Freeman, on the last lap, that's what you've got to go. But I had a lot of obstacles, but I achieved and succeeded. Yeah, I guess I have two beautiful men in my life that were non-violent men. My dad, Archie Smallwood, who was sent to Palm Island and was treated so brutally, like everybody that was sent there, and my lovely grandfather. Never heard them raise their voice, never saw any violence from them, which I thought was quite unusual, because we lived in a community and the whole community wasn't non-violent. We actually witnessed a lot of violence. None in my grandma's house, and we lived with Nan and Pa. And my dad, when he and my mum divorced amicably, he was like the encyclopedia for everybody. He was amazing. And I'll never forget one day, because most of our Indigenous people used to use card games, and I'd sit and listen. I was like a little busybody. And any of the men that were beating up on their wives, I'd run to my grandmother, who was a tough Vanuatu woman, and she'd bring a big boiler stick and go to the men and sometimes get stuck into the men because we were horrified at this violence. But she was given the respect. And my dad and grandfather weren't the only men that were non-violent. There were a few other men that I'm going to name in my book. But one thing that stuck in my mind was my dad said, women of all races need two things, and it doesn't cost any money, love and respect. And in a lot of my lectures that I give, so my dad and grandfather, they were like, I think they were the charge of the Dalai Lama with their gentleness, with their culture. And my dad was very political, very involved in the trades and labour movement and the Labour Party. So I learnt a lot of politics as well. Mm-hmm. He died very young, obviously from the trauma, but that stuck in my mind. And I used to hear him speak to males about don't be cruel to women. And there's lots of men in the world like Dad and Granddad, but we need the younger generation to start taking a role because you've got the football scene, which is of booze and women and treating women as sex machines. And I'm not saying the whole football regime, but young people are learning from that system. And I heard a beautiful young white male, grade 12 speech. He was a school captain of a Christian school and said, my mother, this was only last night on television, my mother was raped as a little girl. And he said, and the pain she would have gone through. And I hope that what I'm telling you today in my speech, that all you young men have to take up arms and assist women in need and don't treat women as sex objects and don't be violent to women. That gave me a lot of hope in terms of a privileged white boy that had brought up a topic that's not usually spoken about in their speeches, especially at private schools. And I am so thrilled and I'm extremely optimistic that black and white will come together because the younger generation are getting degrees but they're doing their research from people that have had lived experience. And I'm optimistic of my 60 years of feminism that Australia is going to unite. We can't do anything about world wars, but what you do in your home has a major reflection on what happens outside the family. And the true history of this country has to be mandatory taught in all the institutions. And I was invited as a VIP guest to Mr. Mandela, and he clearly said that in my country of South Africa, they're having reconciliation with the truth. And in Australia, they're trying to reconcile without the truth, and it'll never work. So it's unfortunate that we have our politicians stopping treaties, stopping truth-telling, but they can't stop people from actually talking about their life. And so that's my optimism. And I'd like to say Wadamuli again. And I'm just so proud of your book and learnt about it today and all of your work with feminism. And I do believe my non-Indigenous little mate of 52 years, Megs Davis, we both worked together at the Aboriginal Medical Service and we're still friends. And I'll close now because I'm looking forward to reading the book and I'm looking forward to hearing the podcast and extremely honoured to have some of my life story that I've been writing a diary for 60 years and I want my book out and my dad named the book Amazing Grace.
Oh, thank you very much, Gracelyn, for sharing all that with us and especially some of the lessons you learned from your grandfather and your dad coming from your country and how you were able or you are still able to actually put it in practice or talk about that to the younger generation. So thank you very much.
Thank you.